We're back with Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we heard about the current exhibit at the Milwaukee Public Museum that explores the world of the ancient Mayan civilizations of Central America. Among other things, the Maya were pretty good astronomers.
In the intervening centuries, things have only gotten better for scientists. Astronomers, in particular, have benefited from huge advances in technology that allow them to explore ever earlier into the history of the universe itself.
One of the key pieces of technology that has enabled that exploration is the Hubble Space Telescope. And for our astronomy segment this month, contributor Jean Creighton explains why she's featuring that in her current programming at the Manfred Olson Planetarium.
The Hubble has been up for 28 years, and for some people, especially on campus, they don't know life without it, right? And I thought it might be fun to talk about the four most important contributions, I think, that the Hubble made. And I thought it would be fun to have a series of those kind of top hits of the Hubble.
I mean, to me, I remember certainly the time before the Hubble, as do you, and it was really revolutionary when it went into orbit.
It was. But I feel I ought to say here something that I think most people don't realize, that there are dozens of space telescopes in space. And furthermore, the first one went up in 1965. So these have been there. It's just that I think the Hubble made a real point, a real effort to connect to everybody, to make sure that in addition to the science, of course, that it does, that there was also an aesthetic value that anyone could perceive. The people who are footing the bill would be happy to pay the bills if they could see what came out of this instrument.
And why had that not been done before? I mean, as you say, the first one went up in 1965. There are other ones up there, certainly doing good science and getting back interesting data for us. What made NASA decide to make this sort of the people's telescope?
I think when they realized that they're vulnerable, their funding is vulnerable, and if people don't continue to want to support it, especially, you recall, of course, that Hubble had some difficulties at the beginning. The mirror hadn't been smooth enough, and therefore the images that came out originally were not as good as they ought to be. So there was some pushback, and people were starting to wonder, well, why are we spending money to do these projects, etc. So I think people at NASA realized, and the Space Institute, that we can't just take it for granted that people are going to want to support these projects. We need to make it somehow worth their while and bring them along.
Come along on the journey.
Yes, yeah. Come along. Explore with us.
All right. Well, we have been exploring for 28 years with the Hubble. And what is, for today's conversation, what is the one pillar? We have four pillars of kind of big knowledge that the Hubble has helped us understand better. What's the one we're talking about today?
We're going to talk about how we understand now better the past, present, and future of the universe and how it expands. So that's a
big topic.
Big topic, yeah. So we're going to cut it into little pieces, because what it requires to make that assessment is to be able to measure the rate of expansion of the universe at different distances from us, in other words, at different epochs. So what was the rate of expansion of the universe far and then farther still? Because that tells us what was the rate of expansion of the universe before and even before then. So far, so good?
Yeah, we're kind of figuring out the timeline as well as distance traveled over that timeline.
Right. So we're trying to isolate what is the rate of expansion of the universe at two different times. And before 20 years ago, we thought, I think somewhat naturally, that if you have some massive, let me call it an explosion, expansion, a sudden expansion of the universe, that our instinct said we presumably are running out of steam. So now we are expanding slower than we did in the past, or at best, we're cruising at the same speed.
Right. That initial explosion was huge, and then things kind of level out or slow down.
Right.
Okay.
So that was what we thought. And the thing that the Hubble Space Telescope could do for us was that it could measure distances more accurately for a certain class of object that we call a supernova. And most people have heard the term supernova. It's what happens when a massive star explodes. We know that's a beautiful thing, but what makes the explosion interesting scientifically is that at that peak moment where it's producing the most amount of light, it actually does it consistently throughout all the supernovae. There's a particular class of supernova that is what we call a standard candle. In other words, if one looks brighter than the other, then you can do some simple math and figure out how much closer the brighter one is from the other. We can also use the Hubble Space Telescope, like many of these instruments, to figure out the speed of said supernova. So the idea was that if you look at the rate of expansion of the universe and you measure that, because supernova that are reasonably far, the speed that you measure is not their speed moving through space. It is them piggybacking on space itself.
Oh, okay.
So they give you a flavor of how fast is the universe expanding at that time. The expectation was that the farther you look, the earlier the universe was, and therefore the speed ought to be faster than it is more recently.
Right.
That was the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And we started finding, as I said, 20 years ago now, that in fact the evidence was the opposite, that the rate more recently has been faster than it used to be.
So we're speeding up.
We are speeding up. The universe is accelerating in its expansion. And as you can imagine, at first people thought, okay, we've made a mistake somewhere. We need to look at this data again. There's some problem.
Redo our calculations.
Redo the calculations. Yep. And people redid the calculations. Other groups to verify did different kinds of observations. Now it's been confirmed to death. The universe is accelerating in its expansion. And, of course, you know where this is going. We don't know why that is. But it makes for spectacular science. I mean, that's the beautiful thing, right? We discover something unexpected, and then we have to go back to the drawing board to figure out, huh, we didn't expect this. Now let's figure out why this might be. We should acknowledge that this data was hard enough to get and to process and to understand, that, you know, groups of people got a Nobel Prize for this work. And I strongly suspect that whoever figures out what the nature of what we call now dark energy is will probably pick up another Nobel Prize. The idea is we don't know why the universe is accelerating in its expansion. Maybe it is the nature of gravity. Maybe it's the nature of space-time. Maybe there's something completely different. Maybe we need to tweak even Einstein's theory that works so well for us. We're not quite sure. People are working on it for sure. It's a very, very current, hot astronomical field of research.
Thanks to the Hubble.
Yeah, and it kind of brought that certainty that, you know, an idea that we held dear for so long, that surely the universe at most is cruising at the same speed. We had to re-examine it and come up with new and fascinating ways of solving this mystery.
And that's one of the things that I love about our conversations and about science in general, is that it's always ready to take on the unexpected and say, okay, we have to rethink how we perceive the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to, I mean, there's that human resistance to change and say, no, I believe this. But it's wonderful that we can kind of sit here and go, oh, okay, shift.
Right.
Let's rethink this.
Right.
And all new things, some of which we will never imagine in a gazillion years talking to each other, may come out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I like the idea that, as you say, it takes a little time to shift, and there's good reason for that. You do want to make sure the data is solid, because it's easy to find a result that quickly you realize, oh, okay, I just made a mistake. That was not really true. But the fact that multiple people can reproduce the effect with different kinds of data, even different approaches entirely, builds confidence, and then you say, okay, I can't ignore this result anymore. I have to figure out why.
I have to incorporate it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who knows, as you say, maybe there'll be a new theory or at least a tweak.
That's right.
To Einstein's.
To what we understand, yeah. So that alone, I think, is just a marvelous thought to have in February about all the information that we amass, that we process, that we try and figure out, and kind of become wiser about how it all works.
Lake Effect contributor Gene Creighton's day job is as the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium, which is located on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Gene joins us each month to discuss all things astronomical.